Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you are tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast that dives through the changing landscape of the entrepreneurship ecosystem and the challenges within. Caught in the pandemic, self-pampering has certainly become a thing of the past for most of us. But Urban Company, which is backed by marquee investors such as Tiger Global, is right there and trying to make sure that you don't miss out on that while not compromising with your safety. Therefore, today we have with us Abhiraj Bell, founder and chief executive of Urban Company, to talk about the measures he's taking and why he thinks India cannot stop in the wait of a vaccine. Hi, Abhiraj. Thank you so much for taking time out for us.
Thank you very much for having me, Priyanka.
You know, Abhi, India reported the most new COVID-19 cases of any country in the past week. And the numbers are only increasing given that situation currently. Don't you think Urban Company is riding a tiger currently?
Not in particular, Priyanka. If I was to, you know, talk about Urban Company and what we do as a company, as you're well aware, Urban Company offers a host of reliable, safe and high quality home services, ranging from plumbing, carpentry, cleaning and painting to personal beauty and grooming services at home. And what you would be very surprised to learn is that we are now, as a company, almost back to 100% levels of where we were pre-pandemic or pre-COVID. You know, most of April and early May was the lockdown when we were operating either shut or operating at a very, very small scale, only in categories allowed by the government. And the marketplace resumed operations in the second half of May with more fervor, and then in June with even more fervor. And since then, you know, the marketplace has actually bounced back very well. And bounced back to, you know, now almost 100% of our pre-pandemic level in terms of both revenues as well as orders. And I think there are three things that are guiding this V-shaped recovery for us and this very, very fast bounce back. Number one is that, you know, there's a broader trend towards getting things done at home. If earlier, as a consumer, you know, for your haircut or for your beauty appointment or anything else, you had a choice between going to a salon or a barbershop, you know, now most people are resorting to getting these services at home, and that's driving share shift towards players like Urban Company. The second is, overall, there are strong tailwinds towards all kinds of online services and product commerce companies. And I think there is a huge shift that we are seeing from consumers to buy and transact online. And this is probably, over the next few months and quarters, what we will realize is that the journey that India would have taken in a few years has gotten compressed to a few quarters in terms of online adoption. This is something that's already happening very rapidly in both China and the US as well. And the third, I would submit, is consumers now willing to you know, opt in for and pay a slight premium, not a very heavy premium, but a slight premium towards an organized and safe service like Urban Company. If earlier you're, you know, water purifier needed repair, refrigerator needed repair, or you needed plumbing, the option was to opt for a local contractor or to opt for Urban Company. Our promise earlier was just reliability and quality. Today, we add a third promise to that offering, which is also safety. Because of all the safety precautions we take, the various trainings that we have done around safety, the PPE kits, etc., that our service partners wear, and multiple other safety protocols that we have put in place. And that ensures that both our service partners as well as our customers are, you know, protected. So I think as a result of all the three things, one being, you know, the fact that consumers are likely to, over the next few months, as well as what we're already seeing, you know, avail things at home. Number two, there's a general shift towards online. And number three, you know, our own operations, our operations excellence playbook, our safety protocols, and the fact that we've been able to, you know, make sure that supply is available wherever we are seeing demand. This has meant that we've been able to bounce back to 100% already. And what we actually expect and are projecting over the next few months is that we will hit new normals in terms of the growth of the marketplace over the next few months. So we're actually quite bullish about the prospects of the company. We think that we can see significant growth as a company over the next 12 to 18 months. And we actually think that in the medium term, as we look back, of course, the pandemic is a significant human crisis, and it's not lost on us. But as a company, it will be an inflection point in our company's journey when we will not just hit new normals in terms of growth, but also be able to, you know, establish a very strong brand with our consumers through all the safety and other investments that we make, as well as stand by our service partners. Many of them who are now joining us and joining the platform have, you know, in the offline world, lost their jobs with either a salon or a repair shop or a local contractor. Their livelihood continues with Urban Company. Many of our partners who were with us before COVID have seen their earnings bounce back to COVID levels, pre-COVID levels, rather fast. And even through the pandemic, we have done many things to take care of them, including offer 0% interest loans, including offering health insurance and many other benefits to stand by them. So overall, we think that this, you know, entire phase that the company is going through will be a strong inflection point, which will help the company emerge much more stronger. And we're already seeing that, having recovered nearly 100% of where we were before COVID.
Well, that's quite comprehensive, and 100% is actually quite impressive as well, I would say. Now, talking about this number and talking about the customer acceptance, of course, of the online services and online delivery, which specific category that you provide has actually managed to garner the maximum amount of popularity by the customers?
Yeah, that's a good question, Priyanka. And I would sort of break that question down into three types of categories. So one are categories which are seeing, I would say, significant tailwinds and are already, you know, much, much larger than they were before the pandemic. And in this, you know, falls categories like haircuts and grooming services for men at home. This was a very small category which we had newly launched before the pandemic. So the base was small, but it has since grown very rapidly and is much, much larger, you know, multiple times of what it was before the pandemic. And this is a category that continues to be supply starved. We are seeing strong acceleration, strong demand from consumers, and the category continues to be supply starved. So that's one type of category which is seeing strong tailwinds. I would say the second bucket is categories which are seeing slight tailwinds, but not very strong. So there are some positive impact, but not very strong. Almost all kinds of home repair and maintenance related services are in this bucket. So for example, painting as a service for us is now two times larger than it was just before the pandemic. Electricians, plumbers, carpenters, appliance repair, cleaning, all of them have crossed the pre-pandemic levels and are now at about 10 to 20% higher. So this is the second bucket, which is, you know, the first bucket is multiple times. The second bucket is, you know, between sort of, say, 100 to 120%, all the way till about 200% higher than the pre-pandemic levels. The third bucket is categories which are still below the pandemic, pre-pandemic levels, and where we expect the recovery to happen over the next 6 months. And this includes predominantly two categories, beauty services for women, as well as massage and spa services for men and women at home. These categories are slightly more discretionary in nature, much more high contact, physical nature to the service. And therefore, they have only reached about 50 to 60% of the pre-pandemic levels. But even that, when we compare with the offline world for these particular services, our understanding is that we are much higher recovery compared to most salons and spas in the offline world, which are, you know, still struggling with anywhere between 10 to 30% recovery. So that's those are the three buckets, and blended across all the three types of services, the overall platform recovery has now been about 100%.
Can be easily summed up that, again, all of the segments that you're talking about, which have recovered and are doing better than the rest, will fall under the quote-unquote essential category, right?
Yes, Priyanka, I think that's a good way of looking at it. You know, haircuts for men, certainly after a point, tend to become essential. And then I would say, you know, all our home repair and maintenance related services, be it appliance repair, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, cleaning, painting, or even pest control, are more in the essential bucket. Beauty services and spa services, I would say, you know, beauty for women, I wouldn't say is completely discretionary. At the same time, it's not completely essential. So it falls somewhere in the middle. And therefore, the recovery of that has been, you know, higher at about 60%. Spa is a completely discretionary service, and therefore it has only recovered to about 30%. But that's one good way of looking at it, which is whichever are more essential in nature have recovered much higher than the pre-pandemic levels already. And as the service becomes more discretionary, the recovery is expected to happen later.
Okay.
But I must say, across all services, sooner or later, we expect significant share shift, including for beauty services for women and spa services. We expect, as the pandemic, you know, dies out, even these to not just cross the pre-pandemic levels, but grow very fast. So depending upon the category, either we are seeing early share shift or late share shift. But we expect across all categories, significant share shift by the end of 2021, in part because as demand recovers, Priyanka, you have to understand one of the natures of this pandemic is that it is a supply and a demand recession at the same time. It's one of those rare recessions where both supply and demand have been hit. Now, demand will sooner or later recover, particularly for a player like us, which operates in the top 10% of households in India. So our target consumer segment is in the top 20 to 30 million households. And the impact of the pandemic has been felt in those households as well, but much, much lower than the remaining 90% households of the country. So as that demand recovers, the supply side in the offline world will not catch up as fast because the supply side shock is much more real and deeper across salons, barbershops, spas, repair shops, etc. And so we expect, share shift even through the next few quarters across all service categories.
Absolutely. And you very rightly pointed out, and this was the next question that I was actually trying to ask you, that gig economy as a sector, as a segment in itself is something which has been largely impacted by the pandemic. We've seen this sector consisted of, you know, a lot of blue collar workers, a lot of migrants who've now gone back to their native towns, to villages. So if I were to ask you, how has your business been impacted because of the lack of sufficient supply of service providers? And going forward, how do you see the correction happening?
So specific to the realm of home services and the domain that we play, home and beauty services, I would say in our case, actually, most of the service professionals for the first time have realized that gig platforms are more resilient and better to work for than the offline world. And I'll quantify this with a couple of examples. Prior to the pandemic, there would always be a push in our strategy to onboard service partners. We would have to convince them, we would have to tell them why their earnings would be much higher than, you know, working for a salon or a repair shop or a local contractor, why it would be a safer platform, why they would have the benefits of formalization like insurance, like financing solutions, etc., and why overall opting for Urban Company was a better thing to do. This was something pre-pandemic that we had to explain to them. Post-pandemic, the trend has reversed. Because while at Urban Company, we have taken care of all our service partners, we have extended, 0% interest loans to them, health insurance to them, etc. And the business, more importantly, has recovered faster. And therefore, their earnings have recovered and bounced back faster to 100% of pre-pandemic levels. And those earnings are anyways 2 to 3 times the average in the market. Their offline counterparts, in most cases, ended up losing their jobs and getting dislocated. So most workers in salons or local repair shops or local painting contractors ended up very quickly losing their jobs. They were anyways part of an informal economy. It wasn't like they had a full-time job per se, which was paying PF and ESI. But even if they did have that full-time formal sector job, many of them have ended up losing it. And then they've looked at their friends who work for Urban Company and realized that, hey, Urban Company helped my friends even through the lockdowns. And then post the lockdown, the business has recovered faster. So many of them have come to us, and there's almost a pull now in favor of Urban Company. To give you some statistics, since the lockdown started in April, we have onboarded 5,400. I was just looking at this number up till the end of August. We have onboarded 5,484 new service professionals to the platform. All of them have been selected, trained, and onboarded onto the platform afresh. So these are 5,484 literally new jobs that we have created during the pandemic, because if it hadn't been for Urban Company, I'm pretty confident none of them would have been able to find a suitable job anywhere else, because everybody else is laying off, not hiring.
Which takes your total number to? And
our total number close to about 25,000 right now.
25,000. And what is the average income most of these people are generating on a monthly basis?
Yeah, like I said, we've reached back to the pre-pandemic levels. And therefore, the average earnings also now has reached back to the pre-pandemic levels. The average earnings on the platform after removing urban company commissions are anywhere between 30,000 to 35,000 per month, which is, you know, significantly higher than the offline world, where many of them in tier one cities would make, you know, anywhere between 15,000 to 20,000, but in tier two cities it could be much lower, in the zip code of 8,000 to 12,000. So at 30,000 to 35,000 net of commissions, this is a very, very good middle class income that the average professional makes. Now, I must say that many professionals, particularly in the beauty category, who are young mothers, you know, choose a flexible option of working, and therefore they would be earning much lower in the range of 20,000 to 25,000, because they opt for a more flexible schedule. But any professional who want, you know, de-averaged for the flexible workers, any professional who wants to, there's nothing stopping a professional from making 35,000 to 40,000 rupees a month net of urban company commissions. This is the average. And if I look at, you know, the top 10-20% professionals in any category in any city, they would easily be 50-100% higher compared to the average. So the promise of urban company has always been that if you join urban company, apart from formalization, apart from the benefits of you know, an accidental insurance, a life insurance, a health insurance program, loans for you, and free training, apart from all of those good benefits, you also get to earn on an average 2x compared to your opportunity cost outside the platform. And that promise has been the reason why many service partners historically have come to us. The fact that we have been able to bounce back even in a pandemic situation and in a few months deliver that promise, I think just makes the, you know, sort of goes to show how strong the proposition of a platform like Urban Company is.
Right. That sums up to this with quite a lot. Also, Abhiraj, you know, let me take you through some numbers which you yourself quoted, I think, beginning of this year. You said that the company had $100 million in the bank. This was before the lockdown happened in January, I think. And now, as we are talking, it's been almost like 7-8 months. And the cost of operations, I'm sure, has increased given the fact that more and more investment is going in maintaining safety and hygiene of the workers of the company. Besides that, a lockdown happened, during which I'm sure your business was paused for a while. And of course, you know, all these months, there must have been an average burn that the company would have incurred. So what is the cash that you are sitting on as we speak? And what are your plans to raise your next round of funding?
I think we continue to sit on a very strong balance sheet, Priyanka. I won't give specific numbers, but you know, I would say most of the capital that you mentioned is in the bank, the vast majority of it. We continue to sit on a strong balance sheet. Our burn rates are, you know, much lower than we had projected at the beginning of the pandemic, thanks to the recovery. We continue to have years of runway, and capital worth years of runway. We have no immediate plans to fundraise. We believe we have sufficient capital in the worst case scenario. If we had to raise no further rounds of capital, we believe that this capital that we have in the bank is more than sufficient to turn the company profitable and take it public eventually. Because fundamentally, it's a strong unit economics positive business model. So at this point of time, there are no plans to raise additional capital. Raising additional capital is always dilutive, as you know, for the founding team, for employees, and for all existing shareholders. So one has to be very sure whether one wants to raise it or not. Right now, we are, you know, we have, I would say, easily years of runway and years of capital, and we would want to invest that first and grow the business significantly before we decide to, you know, raise capital in the future, either privately or from the public markets. So that's the current thought process.
Isn't it difficult to keep away the temptation of being called a unicorn? I remember last fundraise, the company was valued somewhere over $950 million, just short of a few million dollars to become a unicorn. Is that something that makes any difference to what you do or not?
Short answer is it makes absolutely no difference at all. I remember, so the company was, you're right, valued at a little more than 900 in the last private round. And I remember the conversation at the time, you know, with one of my investors, and He asked me the same question. He said, you know, does it make sense to optimize for $1 billion in valuation? Is that something that you care about? And my answer was, you know, that I don't. And that's not even remotely an important metric to optimize for. And he agreed with me. Look, I think valuation anyways is an outcome metric. It's not a metric that as a founder I control. We are a privately held company, but if we were a public company, then, you know, every day the valuation would flow. As a, you know, entrepreneur, you obviously want to make sure that you're creating value for your shareholders. But value gets created in over a long period of time by, you know, building a high quality business and doing the right things for your business. So I think that's what we are focused on. We're focused on, you know, first and foremost, building a very, very high quality platform through which consumers get a superlative service experience, the best kind of service experience that they can get and that they can encounter, and a very, very safe, hygienic, high quality and reliable experience. That's the first goal. The second goal is as we do that, we have to carry our partners along. We have to make sure that they are well trained, they are formalized, and they are earning a decent middle class wage. And we have to make sure that our own business is growing well and is, over a period of time, becoming profitable. So those are the three goals that I, as a founder, optimize for. To deliver on these goals, there are other things that you have to do, including, you know, hire a great team, empower them, build a great internal culture, constantly keep learning, improving yourself, stay nimble, invest heavily in technology. It is one of the things I believe will be a huge disruptor over the 10-year period. And my own view is that 10 to 15 years later, the winning companies in every sector, be it shipping, oil and gas, energy, you name it, airlines, travel, hospitality, any sector out there, the winning companies will be technology-first companies.
Right. And which comes at a time when you announced a $5 million ESOP sale program for your stakeholders, I would say employees as well. So what's the update on that? Can you take us through that?
Yes, we felt that, our ESOP program, we take great pride in having built a world-class ESOP program, which, you know, is very, very friendly to our employees and helps us attract and retain great talent. To just give you a few tenets about this program, we offer a strike price or an exercise price of ₹1 to our employees even today. We offer a linear vesting schedule, 25% each year over 4 years. We have accelerated vesting in the event of an IPO or an exit. And we don't, you know, we have a no hold period up till an exit. So you don't have, you're not forced to exercise your ESOPs after you leave the company within a stipulated period of time, which has tax implications and therefore makes ESOPs null and void for a lot of employees in other companies. So these terms make our ESOP program, to the best of my knowledge, world class. We've also created liquidity events for our employees to ensure that they don't think of ESOPs as paper money. Think of them as think of it as real money. In fact, more better than real money because it's an asset whose value appreciates. So the first event was done in 2017. The second one was done in late 2018, early 2019. And the third one is this one. It's the largest one where 180 employees were eligible to participate. And finally, 130 of them participated. And we created liquidity worth $5 million. So all of this is real money that has gone into the pockets of these employees. They realize that, you know, ESOPs are real, that ESOPs, you know, are an appreciating asset. It makes them more long-term and develop more skin in the game with the company. They think of the company as their company, and they operate with an ownership mindset, given that they now have shares of the company. And it helps us attract, you know, future talent. And it also brings down, you know, the fixed expense or the salary expense that we have to pay to our employees. So overall, I think it's a great win-win. And it aligns long-term incentives very, very well.
100 participants is quite an impressive number, Viraj, I must say. And having said that, do you remember any story of any person, maybe a peon of your company or an office boy who was also impacted and positively impacted by this? Any story which will be a human interest story?
We haven't given ESOPs to you know, peons and office boys because they are not on our company payroll, and we give ESOPs to people who are on the payroll of the company. But a lot of our people who work in our call center, our customer experience team, our partner experience team, these people have you know, benefited from ESOPs. Some of them have gone on to purchase homes, etc. So these are very, you know, heartening stories.
Right. One quick last question, Abhiraj. The company's operating revenue doubled during the previous financial year, despite the fact that pandemic all arrived almost around the same time. I mean, I would say, given this financial year, it was almost there in the country. What are your expectations with regards to your finances for this current financial year?
It's too early to comment on that, Priyanka. I think, you know, obviously there's like, despite having recovered to 100%, it's taken us 5 months to recover to that point. So I think it, you know, it's too early to say. We expect the remainder of the financial year to be very strong and for us to grow quite significantly.
Given that it's a gig economy service, given that, you know, you don't have really a control over the service providers as to what they are doing when they are outside going, giving services to people. What if one random case comes up, something or the other goes wrong? It's a highly infectious disease. It's something that people are very cautious of, very scared of. And, you know, this is not something we can take lightly. So what is your day like, Abhiraj? What sort of anxiety are you living in? Or if I could also say and ask you, what sort of, how alert are you with any such instance, if at all reported, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good question, and I think, you know, it might be helpful for me to, you know, talk about some of our safety measures and safety protocols, because as a user, that may not always be evident to everyone, you know, everything that we are doing on the safety front. So let me start off by taking the example that you mentioned, right, which is, hey, you're providing masks, gloves, sanitizers, face shields, coveralls and shoe covers to professionals, but how do you ensure that adherence happens? You're not there physically present when the service is being delivered. So it's completely up to the service professionals, you know, whims and fancies. That's actually not true. And this is where the power of technology comes in. And when I say technology, technology for us is not just, you know, website or an app through which the consumer books the service, but an end-to-end involvement in the service. And I'll give you an example. Before the pandemic, we used to have a facial recognition feature. And whenever the service professional would start the job, they were required to take a selfie. And what this facial recognition feature and our artificial intelligence tool did was it recognized if it is the same service professional who is going or it is somebody else. Because if it's somebody else, there has been an identity compromise, and that's a compromise on trust and safety. And that's not good for the platform, and that would create a flag immediately in our system. That facial recognition software and tool was repurposed to make sure that service professionals are wearing a mask, a glove, and are having sanitizers to the extent that it is able to recognize if the service professional is wearing a medical grade mask that has been sent by the company or is just wearing a washable, reusable mask. And if they're wearing a washable, reusable mask, the software and the AI tool picks it up. Similarly, if they're wearing a plastic glove or if they're wearing, you know, some other gloves that are not sent by the company, it picks it up. If they don't have the face shield, it picks it up. That's one small example of, and then immediately we intervene and we get them to go through the training program. And if they repeat this offense, then we block their IDs on the platform as well. That's one example of how, apart from sending PPE kits, and we're likely to invest 20 to 25 crores this financial year just in distributing millions of masks, gloves, etc. to our service partners for free. Apart from that distribution, how we have repurposed our entire software, our technology to ensure that every single job, these safety checks are there. And one of the things I say is that even average professionals perform very, very well when they know that they're being watched by technology, and even great professionals will perform suboptimally if there are no checks and balances in place. So that's one. The second thing is all our service professionals have gone through a mandatory 7-day training program on the safety and health and hygiene guidelines laid out by WHO. Unless they have completed the 7 days, they are not allowed to go live on the platform. The third and very important thing is that we have launched I would say the first of its kind, most unique program to take care of any kind of health emergencies and health issues that our service professionals have, called the Suraksha Holiday, unique to any gig economy. As part of this program, the only thing, even if they have the slightest of symptoms, simple cold or simple cough, all they have to do is call our helpline. Once they call our helpline and report they have this simple cold or cough, we ask them to quarantine at home, and we pay them to quarantine at home on a daily basis. So they are paid to stay at home. And this is very, very unique to Urban Company, and to the best of my knowledge, globally unique. And there is enough evidence from previous pandemics all over the world that informal economy workers continue to work through the pandemic, even if they feel the symptoms of the disease, because of fear of loss of earnings. So we have removed that fear of loss of earnings by introducing this paid sick leave program, unique to the gig economy, to the best of my knowledge. After that, we get them a free teleconsultation by a qualified group of doctors. We have partnered with a company called Pristine Care for the same. And if the doctor prescribes, we get a COVID-19 test. We have done hundreds of tests so far on our expense for our service professionals. If they are tested positive, we then will get them admitted to a hospital. Our health insurance program with ICICI kicks in, where they get a 25,000 rupee grant. And until they fully recover, they are not allowed to go back to the marketplace. After discharge also, they have to go through a 28-day paid quarantine period, only after which they can resume on the marketplace. Apart from all of these checks and balances on the service partner side, we have introduced many, many checks and balances on the consumer side as well. We ask every consumer to self-declare. We give the option to service partners to deny jobs if they feel that they are unsafe, etc. There are many other things that I haven't spoken about, particularly on hygiene, how we sanitize our tools, how we are using single-use disposable sachets and products. Net-net, we are doing everything we can in our control as a marketplace to offer the safest, best services. Now, we also make it very clear to the consumers as they avail the service that there's nothing called zero risk and there's nothing called 100% safe. At the end of the day, we are in a pandemic, and as a company, our responsibility is to leave no stone unturned to protect the health and safety of our customers and our partners. At the same time, consumers and service professionals should also be responsible when they use the Urban Company platform.
Now, if I'm right, none of your service providers get salaries from you. This is totally dependent on what they make as business, out of which they are entitled to pay you a commission. Now, how do you pay them for taking leaves, and what is this amount? And how much have you dedicated in terms of a bank to cater to this specific requirement of your service partners?
That's a good question. So the paid sick leave program, obviously, because the service professionals are not on our payroll, could not have been funded by Urban Company. While we did, you know, do other things like direct transfers at the beginning of the pandemic and give out 0% interest business advances, for the paid sick leave program, we decided as a company and as 1,100 employees to contribute from our salaries. Some of our investors also pooled in, and we partnered with a foundation called Srinidhi Foundation, and we created a corpus of 1.5 crores from the donations of full-time employees within the company and investors and some well-wishing customers. This 1.5 crores is being used for three primary purposes. One is it's being used to fund our paid sick leave program. The second is that it's being used to help out any partners who might have an exurgency or might be in need as a result of this pandemic. And third is that it's being used in cases where the hospitalization expenses are crossing above the 25,000 insurance cover that ICICI provides. So that's how we're funding this part of it. Apart from that, there are other things that we have done, like the health insurance, like the interest-free business advances, and like direct transfers, all of which were funded by the company.
That's been quite comprehensive, Abhiraj, and I'm sure that, you know, this pandemic, while it is the crisis situation for the country, for the world, it also gives us an ample opportunity to take care of our health, to stay with people who are close to us, and of course, at the end of the day, see the business models, which one would thrive and which one would not. All right, then, on that note, Abhiraj, I would really like to thank you for taking time out for us.
Thank you so much, Priyanka. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
So that's all that we have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write down to us. Our email is mcpodcast@nw18.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with our user ID @moneycontrolcom and @PriyankaSahai. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.